Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Thursday morning. 9:12 is the time. It's the Roundtable panel. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, our Roundtable panel today on this first of 2020. Sarah Rogerson is here from Albany Law School. She is director of the Immigration Law Clinic. Also today with us, Jim Hendler from RPI, where he is Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences and director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, is here. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo and WAMC's Alan Shartok. Good morning, all.
Yay.
Good morning. Happy Hello. New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Everybody have a good New Year's, safe New Year's Eve?
Absolutely.
Well, that's good. That is very good. Everybody have fun. Alan, what'd you do?
We saw Little Women yesterday.
For New Year's. Yeah, did you like it?
New Year's Eve. And I loved it. Really? I thought it was one of the greatest films I have ever seen. I felt really, really good about the whole thing. And I want to make
now,
sure
why do you
that
say it so effusively?
I want to make sure everybody got the news that, you know, there are different opinions about it. But I thought it was wonderful.
Really I went good. To see Bombshell, which is about big women, and I felt a lot better about that. It was great.
You liked it?
Yes. Yeah, good. Really well done. John Lithgow as the evil Roger Ailes was amazing, and his simpering wife. Oh, it was really good. I went with a friend, though, who has a vision problem. He can't quite tell people apart, you know? And the whole idea, of course, was part of it, is that the three women who are fighting against sexual harassment at Fox all look almost identical. Charlize Theron is like a chameleon. She never looks like herself, and she turned into Megyn Kelly for it. I like this a lot better.
I was in bed at 10, 11:30.
Really?
So, yes.
Yeah, I was in bed at 8:30.
And my kids are 9 and 6, so we watched Spies in Disguise, which was probably not on your top five movies to watch for the new year. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was great. Will Smith plays a CIA operative. Yeah. And picks up a kid sidekick who has all kinds of wacky inventions.
I'll be darned.
Cool. It's a great family-friendly
film. It's up to you, Jim. Yeah. I hope you had a more exciting
I was going to say, I hung out with some friends and drank champagne at midnight and then went home. Yeah,
good for you.
You're the adult in the room.
Well, I didn't mention the bottle of wine and the Prosecco we had.
At the movies?
At midnight?
Afterwards. Oh, okay. At midnight, of course. Oh. It's New Year's Eve.
Okay, so at 10 to 12, I wake up. And look at the clock. I say 10 to 12. I could go and watch the ball come down.
Yeah.
And then I turned over and said, "The hell with it."
Okay, I am sick of Anderson Cooper, though. I think he's so silly. I don't want to see him do shots and giggle his way through another New Year's Eve program. I want Kathy Griffin to come back.
Okay.
Oof. I liked her too.
It's tall order.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think what she did was that horrible.
Can you remind us what she did without breaking the
rules? She held up a bloody head like Salome with John the Baptist's head, only this one looked like Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
She was called the, you know,
way back
absolutely
when, too,
evil.
Early
yeah,
on. Right?
Like, yeah, it was at the start.
The question is, if she did that now, would she be fired?
I don't know. I don't think she should have been.
Who knows?
Sure, she would have been fired. And the problem is they like a lot of situations similar to this, the you hire quote unquote shock personality, and then they go on the air and shock you, and then they fire you.
And we
well,
see
what
that.
Did you expect?
And we see that we saw one significant death,
the great Don Imus. I mean, he was on the air for, almost 50 years. I remember listening to him literally his first broadcast because I was up at 5:30 in the morning getting ready to go to work. And they came on the air with a Billy Saul Hargis routine. And I thought I had accidentally turned on a Southern Baptist station. And he went on and on and on. He was misogynist and he was a racist and all the other things. And then finally he said one thing that cost him his job, although he did rebound from it. But what do you expect? This is what they hire these people for.
I mean, he had – I align him more with Roseanne. I mean, what he said describing a black woman's basketball team in terms that I cannot repeat
without
on the radio,
that,
although I remember it
vividly.
Yeah. Yeah, was not the same as holding up the head of a political figure. It was – it's just not on the same level at all. I don't know why what she did caused more outrage. Who is the woman that – also a comedian who went to the – led the correspondence, the White House correspondence dinner?
Oh, Michelle Wolf.
Michelle Wolf, yeah. She took a lot of it, too, and that was very much the same, Ira.
Well, that's another event where they bring in these comedians to be irreverent, and when they're irreverent, Imus spoke at that dinner once.
Yeah.
And he made reference with Hillary and Clinton,
Bill Clinton,
about AstroTurf in the backseat of the pickup truck.
Right.
And the inference was clear, and they all looked at him stony face, and then they blasted him for being too irreverent.
He bombed on that particular appearance. That was not a good one.
His radio act never did translate to stand-up.
It's the Roundtable Panel. You can join us by emailing panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. It feels like a Monday. It's early in the week to us because most of us had a day off, but it's really Thursday, so I'll recap the rules. Keep your letters brief, really brief, one or two words. You can do a sentence or two. That's really the best way to do it. To the point, on topic, no attachments, no links, no abbreviations, and please have a quick proofread of those couple of sentences so that we can get your point across. Iran-backed militiamen have withdrawn from the U.S. Embassy compound in Baghdad after 2 days of clashes with American security forces. No casualties or evacuations on Wednesday. Hundreds of militiamen and their supporters attacked the embassy compound on Tuesday, protesting U.S. airstrikes against Iran-backed militia that killed 25 fighters. The U.S. blamed the militia for a rocket attack on an Iraqi military base that killed a U.S. contractor. The violence came as Iran and its allies across the region face unprecedented mass protests. Heavy U.S. sanctions have done some damage to the economy in Iran, and President Trump ordered about 750 more U.S. soldiers to the Middle East, about 3,000 more preparing for possible deployment in the next several days.
I think Jim is the guy to go to here.
Why is that?
Well, because he's very smart and because he knows about this stuff. So what do you think is happening there? Because I can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out very well either. I think Rosemary in a
but I'm not
a small,
smart.
No, I was going to say, but in a quote on Monday, Rosemary said, the real problem is that this administration doesn't have a cohesive foreign policy. I think that's what we see playing out. So in other words, they're just dealing with everything as a one-off event. There was tit for tat, and, you know, where it's going to go is scary. I'm happy to say that the Iranians today said, you know, we're not preparing for war. We're just not afraid of one.
Well, you've seen a number of stories and analysts in the last week or so pointing out that regarding Iran, Trump has tried to be the tough guy. And regarding North Korea, he's tried to be the pacifier.
Yeah.
Regarding Russia, he's gone along with Russia, and it's helping to split up the Northern Europe, or rather Western Europe. How's all this working out for him?
So, Ira, the question to you is, you're the Iranians. You're obviously moving the chess pieces. What? No?
Well, that's my point. Why is he concentrating on Iran? That's his target, and he's listening. This was an Iraqi attack. The Iraqis allowed them into the embassy. It took orders from Washington. You better do something or else. They're moving now more forces into Iraq. And the withdrawal was with the proviso that we think we got our message across and now we're going to work to get Americans out of Iraq. To focus only on Iran advances his hatred of Iran but does not address the situation that's going on.
But these were Iran-backed militias.
The leaders were there. Would not have been
what
able,
did you say, Ray? I'm sorry.
This was an Iran-backed militia attack. Even the NPR, the reporter NPR had there a couple of days ago said, yeah, this is clearly Iranian-backed. The leaders of those militias are here right now.
We spent 50 years in the Cold War with us and Russia doing these proxy wars all over the world. And, you know, you can argue all sorts of things and study that history. But I think what we're seeing in the Middle East is that same kind of developing proxy thing, except that you know, the players and the sides are much less clear how it lines
so
up. You know, we're doing half of what we're doing
what
is for the Saudis.
And these militias fought with the Iraqis and with the Americans when ISIS was a problem. That problem is now gone away. Is America not worried that Iran and Iraq are teaming together? Why were those Iran-backed militia in Iraq? It's because the next step is to get rid of American interests in Iraq and eventually in the Middle East. And that's the big play.
And by the way, the fourth piece to that puzzle that I started to describe with between Iran, North Korea, and Russia is that our allies largely don't trust us anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so there's – what kind of a cohesive foreign policy would have written that down as this is the way we ought to go?
None.
None.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I think the breakup of Europe, again, you know, everything is being viewed from this very myopic U.S. view. But even some of that's not making sense, you know. So Trump was very pro-Brexit. Why?
Yeah.
Totally unclear. It seemed to have much more to do with the personalities involved. Same thing with, you know, Iran, he hates them. North Korea, he likes them. But it seems to have more to do with whether he likes the leader and much less to do with the geopolitics. And it's very complicated to view a world where the big leaders are making these decisions on these very personal grounds.
As Ira mentioned, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has expressed some frustration over stalled nuclear talks. Now he says he's going to show the world a new strategic weapon. Kim also says North Korea is no longer obligated to maintain a self-imposed suspension on the testing of nukes and intercontinental ballistic missiles. Donald Trump still says he's a, you know, Kim Jong-un is a man of his word. He expects him to follow through.
Yeah. To what does he attribute the belief that Kim Jong-un is a man of his word?
The nice love letters he wrote to him.
He looks good on a white horse.
See, a great deal of our problem, and the reason that I asked Jim, who has done so much thinking about this kind of stuff before, is that I just think a great deal is going on that none of us know about. None of us know about. There are things happening between the White House and the Iranians and the Iraqis that we just are not, and to the North Koreans that we just are not privileged to understand. So we can sit here and talk about it, but it would be great to know what was actually being done.
But part of the evidence that we do know about, at least as if we compare to history, is the manner in which Trump conducts business, and not just him personally, but although the administration is largely just him personally, but the how he conducts diplomacy or does not conduct diplomacy. You know, where was Pompeo the day that the issue with Iraq began, with the embassy? Where are Trump's comments that would suggest American outrage, or if it calls for a lack of outrage? He simply does not follow any norms or does not understand what the norms are. So to the extent, and I agree with everything you said about us not fully being aware of what's going on internationally, but it's even worse.
I don't
worse.
Think that's good, by the way.
I don't think it's good. Bad. And it's even worse now with this fellow. And again, there's always the asterisk with this fellow is that he doesn't tell the truth.
Are you suggesting that Pompeo should have flown directly to Iraq? Because he did call, news reports say he did talk to the Iraqi prime minister that day.
He's canceled a trip to the region today, I believe.
Which it was, but I think that has a lot more to do with Ukraine than what's going on in the Middle East. The latest news reveals that he was up to his neck in the whole Ukraine incident, and he and Bolton really tried to get that aid released. So he does not want to be dealing with the trip included to stop Cyprus and Ukraine as well.
Yeah, we've got a whole cabinet full of acting secretaries, and we've got an acting president. Yep. At least he's trying. He's acting like a president and not a very good one.
Yeah. I mean, and they're moving hundreds of troops now into the Middle East. This is never a good thing. American troops in the Middle East, that scares me a lot.
That scares me, you know, because, again, we have this reaction where a contractor gets killed and suddenly, you know, it's a major thing. Imagine now what happens when that starts to be troops. And we've had, you know, you put troops in harm's way, something's going to happen. Even any deployment carries danger, even if you know, it's not a major deployment. So 700 is a very small number of troops.
Well, what he describes it is
people who are probably already on their
the
way.
The anti-Benghazi, that's what he's calling it.
Of course. It's the same. Two things I want to answer, Jim. It's 700 is not, you know, it's not major, but it's the same number of people we pulled out of Syria when he betrayed the Kurds. And now he's moved. So we have not pulled out. That's the lie to his idea that he's pulling us out of entanglement.
Yep.
That's not true.
That's true.
Really.
The anti-Benghazi?
Yeah, that whole talking point that, see, Benghazi under weak Obama was a disaster, and we responded. That is just so misleading and so untrue.
Yeah, he speaks to the warriors that immediately went into the, instantaneously, they were in the region.
And please let us compare. We had a consulate in Benghazi. It was not the embassy. The American embassy in Baghdad is a fortress.
It's the largest embassy of any country in anywhere in the world.
At any time in history, it is like the Pentagon. It's a mini Pentagon. So the fact that it was expelled has a lot more to do with that than also the response. He immediately got in and said, "We're sending more people." He put the entire pressure of the U.S. government on the Iraqis to make sure that they were protected. It just is not at all comparable. And yet you're seeing it. It's all over social media.
Well, the lies which we've been talking about for years on this program just continue, and it never ceases to amaze me. The blatantness, is that the word, of the lies, and the fact that he largely goes unchallenged. And the most recent I saw in the last few days, and I don't know the details of it, but he was bragging about signing something called Choice, and I guess it's a benefit for the veterans or for the military. And he said, others have tried to get Choice into law. We succeeded. Well, the fact of the matter is, as was pointed out in several places, Obama signed it into law, and the legislation was co-authored by, are you ready, Bernie Sanders and John McCain. Yet Trump is claiming he did it. Nobody else could have it done.
Well, that's typical, as Aunt Ruth would say.
So why is it just float into the netherworld? Why aren't more people, including people who support him, speaking out and saying, Mr. President, we like you, but don't tell a lie like this. This is obviously, it's provable that it's wrong. I don't get it.
Well, the Washington Post does it every day says it's provable and it's wrong.
But his people don't believe the Washington Post. Yeah.
Well, that's right.
The problem is the split media. But I was going to say, you know, Alan, to your point, there is a lot of information we don't see and things like that. But I think a lot of the way this is playing out, you know, I shudder every time I hear the president responded in a tweet, right? Because that means, and especially when it's late at night, that means he has not seen the briefings that were prepared by the National Security Council. That means the intelligence community book. I mean, I've seen those things. They're very complex.
I doubt he ever sees those.
Or if he does, he's already made up his mind. And I think that's a real difference between this administration and the last one. The last one, that the response Obama once made, you know, why he hadn't done anything yet, is he said, I want to understand a situation before I decide. Right? Trump is like, makes that decision, and then Pompeo and the others have to follow. And it's almost like an adversarial relation between the president and his group. So some of the things with the withdrawal from Syria and things like that. It's just totally insane. And
he only wants to know enough to identify the political advantage that he can get out of whatever story he wants to spin.
I think that's brilliant. Right.
All right, we have to take a break here. This is the Roundtable Panel. Sarah Rogerson is here, Jim Hendler, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. You, of course, can join us with a quick email to panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back. That's nice stuff. That's Madhu Mokhtar, and that's our bumper music today on the Roundtable. This is the Roundtable Panel, 9:34 on a Thursday morning. Ray Graff here. We're joined today by Sarah Rogerson, Ira Fussfeld, Jim Hendler, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. You, of course, can join us with a quick email. panel@wamc.org is the email address, and miraculously, we have letters.
Cast of thousands. Okay. Jeb says, spreading anti-Semitic attacks. The immense support of Trump by the Orthodox Jewish communities in Brooklyn and upstate has troubled and confused me. Will they call out Trump on his emboldening white supremacists in light of the spreading anti-Semitic attacks? And that's from Jeb in Chatham.
So this is a great example of Trump caring about Trump and not worrying so much about consistency, right? Because he's with one hand giving the Orthodox some of what they want. He's playing the game of, Jerusalem and Israel, and then at the same time he's supporting the supremacists, saying, you know, they're all good people and not condemning things. So it's really it's again, it's this play of I'm saying one thing to one side and one thing to the other. And since we live in these bubbles, they don't hear each other. They don't see these contradictions the way Jeb did.
Yeah. Where is Trump on Muncie? Have you heard him yet express sympathy for that attack?
I think he tweeted something.
Did he? Boy. I mean, I'm not always a huge supporter of Andrew Cuomo, but you have to give the man credit. He showed up immediately in the neighborhood, and he, you know, said all of the things you would expect a leader to say. And Trump had the opportunity, and he's a friend of the Orthodox Jews, supposedly, and other than this tweet, which I didn't see yet, has done nothing.
So the Orthodox Jews tend to be the portion of the Jewish community that's leaning more Republican. And so a funny part of the Orthodoxy, and Libby and I got into some of this on Monday, so we won't repeat it all. But,
we have time.
But the interesting part of it is you can see who, you know, Trump plays to this group one way, to these other groups the other way. And he knows he has their support. It's sort of like the evangelicals. He doesn't worry about them except to throw them a bone every now and then because he knows he's got them.
But the danger is if he takes any group for granted, there may well come a time where he has taken them for granted, and they're going to say, "No, not this time. We don't like what you're doing here."
Hope so.
You think so? I don't.
I haven't seen it happen.
I think Jim's right. I think he takes them for granted. He knows that they're his, and they'll stay there.
Boy, I don't know. If heaven forbid, there are 10 more attacks on Orthodox Jews and people are killed, unlike what happened in this most recent one. Mm. And he doesn't do anything overtly to denounce it. At what point in time do Orthodox Jews, even the most conservative, say, wait a minute, this is supposedly our guy and he's not saying anything?
I mean, we could ask the congregants in the Texas church who just experienced a shooting last week, the same thing. But instead, they're pivoting towards gun rights.
Yeah, he didn't say anything about that attack either, did he?
I think it was another tweet.
Now, maybe it's because he was in Florida, he was on the golf course.
No, it was a pro-gun tweet. It was you know...
Good guys with guns.
Yeah, it was a good guys with guns.
So that was a good letter from Jeb who got people talking. John says, Trump's foreign policy. The panel is wrong. Trump has a foreign policy, and it is quite apparent. Obama failed in North Korea. Hence, he will proceed to have fixed the nuclear threat. Obama fixed the Iranian nuclear threat, so Trump will pretend they are a threat and will end up making them a threat. Obama fought against Russian aggression, so Trump will be Putin's poodle. On and on. John in Valley Falls. Anybody? No?
I think we should invite John to be on the round table.
Jason says, Is Trump's fundraising alarming? Dear panel, various reports show Trump outraising individual Democratic presidential candidates. But when the Democratic side consolidates, won't the cumulative fundraising of the candidates also consolidate? If so, a generic Democratic candidate is outraising Trump by more than 2-1. Why is the story that Trump is winning the fundraising race? Jason from Niskayuna.
That's a great question.
I think that's a good point.
Although it remains to be seen whether or not as much money will flow to the Democrats when we have fewer horses in the race, so to speak.
Right. That's the key to this election is how much are the Democrats going to come together after the dust settles. Because if some of them break off, we're looking at 4 more years of this fella.
That certainly is the key, and you're right about that. Dan says, Trump's severed head. Good morning, panel, and Happy New Year. Rosemary, I love you.
Bye.
But you saw the butt coming. Yeah. But come on. I heard the condemnation from this panel and agreed with it all over the Trump memes of beating up the CNN logo and the outrage over depictions of Obama as a monkey or with a noose around his neck. Believe me, I agree with those opinions and was equally dismayed and outraged over them. But you can't have it both ways and say that equally disturbing images of Trump should come with no consequences. And that's from Dan.
False equivalency. The president of the United States carrying on that way is a lot different than a comedian. That's her whole thing is saying outrageous things. So it's not at all the same. And the second point is that there were consequences for Kathy Griffin. She accepted them at the time, and I'm glad she's overcome them. How come there haven't been for Trump?
Mic drop.
Good morning, says Kevin from Melrose. Kevin from Melrose, 5300. Imagine if Hillary were president, the Republicans would be blaming this attack on Hillary again with three more years of investigations. Where is the fake outrage this time around Republicans?
Well, the Republicans will argue that this is the anti-Benghazi and that Trump immediately brought troops in, as opposed to what the Republicans felt was Hillary and Obama's inaction after Benghazi.
Correct. I'm sure you're right.
Which is so unfair, but yeah, that's they're already saying that. You're right, Ira.
Right. So I suspect it will come up several times. It's a it's an underlying theme of politics, just the hypocrisy that this polarization causes. And, you know, I listened to the exact same people now in the Trump impeachment discussion in the Senate saying exactly the opposite things they said in the Clinton impeachment. And, you know, again, you can there is some false equivalencies. But at the same time, you know, I think one of the stories we had today was a DWI story.
That's
right?
Coming. Which yes.
I'll wait till we get there.
Thank you.
Suffice to say
thank
that,
you for that.
That hypocrisy will be a theme there, too.
Charlie from Pine Bush writes, 2020 is the year that Donald Trump needs to get reelected. The easiest way to ensure that happens is to start a war in the Middle East. To this end, he has been grooming Iran and setting the stage. See, now this is a great example of what Ray was talking about. Grooming Iran.
As far as proofreading.
Yeah, grooming Iran and setting the stage for his triumphant war to end all wars in the Middle East. Unfortunately for us, our young man will fight for Donald Trump personal benefit against American interests and toward Armageddon.
Broken windows politics.
Jonathan, what do you mean?
Does that mean?
So the idea that, like, if you seed unrest, is a little bit different from broken windows policing. But there is a theory that in order to win elections, it's better to make people nervous. So that aligns with the idea that Trump, when all else fails, if his campaign isn't going the way that he thinks it should. He had a message sent to him at that rally in Michigan that maybe his base isn't as stalwart as he thought that it was. And maybe there is a theory out there that part of what he's doing internationally is to make the American public nervous enough to think we want to stick with the guy who's been around for 4 years rather than put somebody new in there.
Whose theory is that?
I have no idea.
Well, isn't that
it's just around
theory?
Yeah, the tail wags of that.
So, you know, I will say one thing. I think Trump at heart is an isolationist. I think Trump really, people say he'd like a war. I think the answer is he may get us into one by stupidity, but I don't think he's going to get us into one on purpose.
So do you think he wants one?
No, I don't think he wants one.
I don't
one.
Either.
I think he believes that the U.S. shouldn't be wasting our money doing things overseas, right, unless it helps Trump. And, you know,
and if we are doing them, it should be military. Because
because of his supporters. But I don't think, he opposed us having troops over. Now, again, it made sense for him at the time. But I think his instinct is to pull troops back. His instinct is not go to war. That said, the minute he's hit, he throws stuff back because that's his personality. But I think that an all-out war with Iran, that kind of thing, I think he sees that as politically something that would be
bad
for
right.
him.
Yes, right. The only thing that you have to think about with Trump is whether or not he thinks it is good for him.
Right.
Right.
I agree.
It is not, he is thinking, this is not good for me if I have a war.
Well, he doesn't want to have to actually do anything presidential. So he wants to make the American public nervous enough to think that there could be a war.
That I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I agree. In other words, I think this little bits thing, I actually think makes more sense in some ways. Yep. Although, again, whether he's doing it on purpose.
But if signaling, which he seems to have done, that he doesn't want a war, does that not hurt him among the international community who know that he doesn't want a war?
He doesn't care, right, Ira? I mean, we haven't seen any evidence he cares about what they think whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, that's a mistake.
And that,
well,
you know,
we think it's a mistake. Yeah. He doesn't think it's a mistake. He got elected president doing what he's doing, and he thinks it's going to work for him again to get elected another time.
I think North Korea and Iran totally have his number.
didn't think so.
And Malcolm Nance had his number, because I remember when he was on the panel and sitting right there and said, and when we said, you know, it looks like the president may have pulled something off here, you know, with North Korea, he laughed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And he said, oh, come on, you know, they're never gonna fall for that. Jonathan says, takeover of our embassy in Iraq would be a major humiliation of Trump. It would lead to his defeat. Who did Trump bribe to call off the Iran-backed militia? What promises were made? Jonathan from Woodstock. Jonathan,
you cannot bribe a militia.
and that is what I didn't write the letter, but I think that that's exactly
that's
the point I was trying
it.
To make.
That's not it. They put pressure, Washington put pressure on Iraq to go move in there. It was not on the militia.
Right. All right, let's take a break here. It's the roundtable panel. Jim Hendler, Sarah Rogerson, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We will be back. Welcome back to the first roundtable panel of 2020. A good panel on hand today. Jim Hendler, Sarah Rogerson, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Ira Fussfeld. The email address is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will ask Parliament to grant him immunity from corruption charges, a step that is expected to delay his trial for some time. The step most likely puts the trial on hold until after elections in March, when he hopes to win a majority coalition. Theoretically, that could shield him from prosecution. The announcement essentially turns the upcoming election campaign into a referendum on whether Netanyahu should be granted immunity and remain in office or step down to stand trial. And Alan, a recent poll indicated a majority of Israelis oppose giving him immunity.
And Trump said, why didn't I think of that?
And not only that, Trump's the big news there was that the conservatives, who are his bulwark, had a split right down the middle with them, too. There are a lot of conservatives who think he should not be granted that immunity. I suspect he's going to get it. And remember the bone that he threw, which was we should be allowed to take over the West Bank settlements and to put that as part of our platform.
So I think if you had some sort of national referendum on it, it's unclear. My guess is he'd end up winning. But remember, it's the parliament where he hasn't been able to create a majority.
Right.
That same majority would have to vote. I think that that article nailed it, that it's a delaying tactic, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, if he was not indicted, if he was convicted, right? Israel has had a lot of corruption in government, things like that. There's a lot, yeah. But it's a country that does not like corruption in government. And I think if he was convicted, it would be the end of his political career. And I think he has figured out a model which says, wait a minute, now I can do this. This will stall the thing. We'll be arguing over it for 3 months. Meanwhile, the elections will happen. Right now, he's ahead in the elections because, again, he was ahead last time. He only needs to get one or two more seats to be able to form a government. He was off by two last time. So, again, I think it's all internal politics, but that delaying tactic one is the first thing I've heard that makes real sense to me.
Without everybody groaning, however, the polling is showing that they're going to end up exactly where they were the last time.
Yep.
I think one of the reasons why Netanyahu has had, I believe, general support in this country for years and years. I mean, he's been on TV for years, long before he was prime minister. He was a spokesman for the government. And I believe it is in large part because he comes across as a clear thinker and he is very well spoken in English. I believe he went to Harvard. So he is an Americanized figure in a circumstance where often the leaders speak with heavy accents and are not understandable. Now, that doesn't believe I'm among those who thinks he's good, but I believe that's one of the reasons he has elevated Israel and in the U.S.'s mind because of his presence.
Well, I think that's right. I think during, you know, he was the face of Israel during the Scud missile crises,
right,
and during the Iraqi.
And his relationship with Trump is incredibly important.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he's doing. Yeah. He's the same guy.
Well, they also have business interests together. Jared Kushner has been a big promoter and benefactor of settlements on in Palestinian lands. I think Israelis face the same kind of dilemma with their leader that Americans do. You have a guy in there who you may agree with at some level, but he is deeply corrupt. I mean, so cynically corrupt, worse than Trump. He took $250,000 in luxury items.
Champagne and cigars.
Come on, that's just appalling. And this is a state like America that prides itself on moral and rightness. It's outlandish. And he has now asked for immunity from prosecution, which is, we talk about Trump and his, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. This is the equivalent of that. He also has been horrendous in maintaining American support of Israel, starting with his acceptance of an invitation to come and speak to Republicans when he didn't even notify the White House this was going on. Never before has support of Israel been linked with Republicans or Democrats. It's always been the whole country. That's gone. And that's a huge loss. So all the good things he's done, I would counter immediately. He is a terrible leader. Terrible.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, and, you know, I think my wife put it very well. So when we were hanging out with our friends on New Year's Eve, we somehow politics came up.
That does happen, doesn't it?
When you were up with the rest of us asleep.
The point being that Netanyahu is, you know, as bad as Trump, but worse in one way. He's smart. He knows how the government works. He knows how to pull the strings within his own government. You know, he's really, so, you know, we talk about Trump having taken over the Republican Party. Netanyahu took over the Likud in Israel in a very deliberative way. He actually split off people. So this primary vote, which he won so handily, right, was the proof of that. Many of the people who used to be in that party who were in the middle are now in those parties that are running against him, things like that. So again, he you know, really has put people into control. He keeps control of things, so he owns like four.
So what does the future look like, Jim?
Wish I knew.
Well, you're as educated as most of us, or as all of us.
You know, I think what we're going to see is that the next election is going to be pretty similar to this one.
Right.
But remember, it only takes a few seats to switch, or it requires, you know, I think if the numbers stay the same, they're going to be forced into a coalition government. The only real issue was who was going to rule first in the last one. And I think it's simply because his partners don't believe that if he starts, he'll ever let go.
Well, there's another issue, too, and that's democracy and what democracy looks like. The thing that bothers me about this story is that the loose parallels continue with regard to the procedures and processes of the American impeachment process, where you have Parliament, Congress making decisions overseen by the judiciary somewhat. And the signals from the judiciary in Israel are, we're independent, we're neutral, so whatever we say will be okay because we're operating from this good faith, even though we know it's going to be political. And when I read the Chief Justice's New Year's statement, right, where a lot of people were saying, oh, this is a goodwill offering. This is, you know, we find hope in this statement that he's mentioning Gorsuch. Yeah. He's talking about all of these things. We want to trust the Supreme Court. It might also be that he's tearing a page out of this playbook and saying, no, you can trust the judiciary. We're not Trump and Obama people. Don't worry. We've got it under control. We're holding the balance of powers in the judiciary. And the thing that bothers me about this story is that we'll see what happens to the judiciary. We'll see what happens to the rule of law. And that's the real sacrifice.
Well, it's so interesting that you say that, because remember his famous statement, Trump's famous statement, that Robert's famous statement, there are no Republican judges, there are no Democrats. Baloney. Of course. Yeah. We can tell you right now how any one of these contentious issues is going to get voted on by the Supreme Court. So there are Republican and Democratic people, and he's trying to swim upstream on this.
And these executives who are deeply corrupt, power-grabbing, stepping over the judiciary and the judiciary allowing it, is potentially going to be the story of this coming decade. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good prediction. We had our predictions on Tuesday, and you know, actually, Jim was listening, and I mentioned to Rosemary or somebody about Baby Yoda that I had never seen. I didn't know what Baby Yoda was.
Yeah.
So you brought a full color picture of Baby Yoda.
Yes, yes, I am.
And all I can say is that is one ugly baby. I got to be honest with you.
I think he's cute.
So cute.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to get Ian Pickus in here to explain how the time works, because I haven't figured out how that could be Baby Yoda, given the
The group was trying to describe what Baby Yoda looked like, and I thought that the perfect description was Yogi Berra. But
I don't know.
A little bit.
Yogi was a little ruddier, at least after he had a couple.
I'll have to tell you about Yogi off the air someday.
All right, fair enough. The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, if you want to write. We have time for maybe one or two, and then we'll break for news.
I'll do as the best I can.
All right, Ray. Sir.
You should give credit to the administration for taking the appropriate forces in Baghdad. Let's hope the situation doesn't fall apart. Also, it's hard for people to read the Washington Post. It's a paid-for service which people can't afford that doesn't cover local news. Let's hope we have a happy new year. We did talk about that on the media project.
I'm not sure I understand the point. It doesn't cover local news, meaning this local news, but it covers national news, and the New York Times and the Washington Post are worth paying for.
And it pays, and it covers metropolitan news, by the way, having lived in Washington and gone
to
school
there. Not very much. It's pulled way, way back for them. My sister used to be in charge of metropolitan news. It does not cover. It's not the paper you read if you want to know what's going on around Washington.
Well, with all due respect, I can only say that when I lived in Washington, there was a major part of the, and that was a long time ago, a big part of the paper was on metropolitan news of one kind or another.
Yeah. When did you live in Washington?
I lived there when I was doing my master's degree.
So how long ago was that?
1,000 years.
1,000 years.
The Lincoln Memorial wasn't
built
there.
Yet. I lived there only 20 years ago. Yeah.
And
so,
okay. Baby Yoda's godfather.
It's definitely the case. That,
and they also had incredible 5 pages of comics.
Oh, you see, that's really the Beetle Bailey.
I was
there. High and low is
2 pages. Yeah.
Right.
Proves that it was
gasoline alley. Let's take a break. It's the Roundtable Panel. Alan Chartok reminiscing with us here about the old days. Rosemary Armeo, Ira Fussfeld, Jim Hendler, and Sarah Rogers. And you can join us. Email us at panel@wamc.org. We will break for news. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable Thursday morning. This is now 2020, and it's 10:08 on your Thursday morning here on the first Roundtable of the new year. Roundtable panel in session. Jim Hendler is here, Sarah Rogers, and Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. You, of course, can join us by emailing a brief message to panel@wamc.org.
Howard wrote such a thing.
Really?
Yes. Said, Baby Yoda, it's not. The Baby Yoda character in The Mandalorian is not Yoda. It is a young child of the same species as Yoda.
Yes. Little Larry Yoda.
But not Yoda.
That's right.
The character is yet unnamed, and so therefore the young one is being referred to as Baby Yoda.
Fine.
But again, not Yoda. Happy face.
Right. So I did hand wave a little about bringing Ian in to talk about how it's Yoda. It's not. Yeah, they
as Yoda might say, care I do not.
Tristan says, Washington Post, happy 2020 panel. I think Amazon Prime membership should include a subscription to the online version of the Washington Post. I'm sure Mr. Bezos can afford to share some of his Amazon wealth with the Post. Have a great day. And that's Tristan from Grafton, New York.
Bezos is sharing some of the Amazon wealth in the form of him. But the last thing I think that should happen is tying Amazon to the Washington Post. That's what Trump does.
I do think they give you a discount through Prime.
Do they?
Yeah. No, they did it one time. Maybe no longer.
Maybe I got to go look again.
How about he just pay his taxes?
Yeah.
How about
be okay.
How about he fund the roads that the trucks deliver the packages on?
It's all drones now.
So anyway, Ed from New Marlboro wrote in to the panel. It is unfortunate that your panel does not seem to have an understanding of Israeli politics, which are far more nuanced and are dealing with many other issues that play into the election. Israel is a parliamentary democracy, which sets it apart from American-style democracy. Additionally, Israel does not have a basic set of laws back into the American Constitution, which are the foundation for American jurisprudence. I am no fan of Benjamin Netanyahu, but none of your panelists note that Israel has a law which would permit granting immunity to Netanyahu already on the books. The question is not whether to pass such a law, but rather whether to apply it in nests.
Netanyahu's
example. In Yahoo's case.
Yeah.
Proofread, please, people.
So I must say that I did not know that about the law and things. I think a lot of the subtleties of Israeli politics, it would take so long to just go into what it means, some of the things that have happened. They tried direct election for a while because they thought it might remove some of the power from small parties. It ended up making the small parties much more powerful. They've tried a lot of different things. You know, the key point there is they don't have a constitution. They do have a set of basic laws. There's a constant struggle between the parliament and the judiciary because they don't have the system we do that with the checks and balances. There's direct appointments and things like that. So it's a very complex system. That said, it's primarily a right-wing, left-wing. There are a few what we would call in the U.S. crazy parties who have very specific agendas, right? So imagine if the gun rights party could have four senators who only cared about guns and nothing else, right? You have some parties like that. There's a party that basically is representing the very far Orthodox Jewish community. There was a big fight at one point over whether pork could be imported from the U.S., right? That party was willing to bring down the government over that issue. Meanwhile, there was an issue about, the Palestinian peace process, things like that. That party was like, we don't care, right? whoever will back us on the pork bill gets our votes on the peace process.
By the way, a lot of people in Israel do eat pork.
Oh, yeah.
They don't call it pork. They call it white.
Well, that's another story. But there is a group who believes that if they make the right decisions religiously, the Messiah will come, at which point everything else becomes meaningless. What scares me is we have people in the U.S. Senate now and one in the White House, second in command of the White House, who seem to have that same belief system, and that's scary because it makes all the things that we talk about and worry about here secondary to them.
Go ahead, Rosemary.
I think all of that aside, I mean, every country is complex and there's a lot more to it and there's nuances that we're not going to get here. What's most relevant here is that there is a law. Forget that they don't have a constitution. There is a law that allows the head of government to escape prosecution, to get immunity. And that is a sign of corruption, wherever it is. Italy, Berlusconi passed the exact same measure for the same reason. He was a corrupt leader of government who saw public service as a private way to escape retribution. And you see Trump doing the same thing.
And bringing money.
And I'm not sure that you have to get much more complex than that.
Justin says, Iraq et al. You should give credit to the administration for taking the appropriate forces in Baghdad. Let's hope the situation doesn't fall apart. Also, it's hard for people to read the Washington Post. It's a paid-for service which people can't afford that doesn't cover local news. Let's hope we have a happy new year. And we heard from Vic, who says, soon we will have none. Trump disses all our friends. Soon we will have none. I rarely listen to news anymore. I get physically ill from stress. But I'm listening today. We will have increased terror incidents at home and a war in the Muslim Mediterranean states. Trump has single-handedly given permission to act on their hate. It is important to me because I am a dyke, and Ben Shahn's poster drives me. And that's from Vic.
Don't get the last part.
What'd you say?
What poster?
Ben Shahn's poster drives
me. I don't know
what that is. Well, me neither. Scott says, why dilute our capital? To the panel, many of us, anyone but Trumpers, are waiting until there's a nominee. Why dilute our capital if dumping Trump is the goal? I'm waiting to give to the max. Scott from Feuerbach.
And the email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. People are doing a fine job of proofreading and keeping the email messages brief, so we appreciate that. There's still time for more. Bernie Sanders says he's raised more than $34.5 million in the final 3 months of 2019. The campaign said today that the haul came from more than 1.8 million donations, including 40,000 new donors on the final day of the year alone. Sanders' total exceeds the $24.7 million that former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg announced a day earlier that he'd raised during the fourth quarter. Strong totals suggest that their party's primary is going to feature a long and protracted fight among well-funded rivals. We saw that Andrew Yang raised about $16 million. And I think, now, if Rosemary's phone was correct, somebody dropped out today. And I didn't see it on CNN here as we're watching.
Yeah, Julio Castro supposedly dropped out. That's being
reported. So the question is, what you just read and what some of what we alluded to earlier regarding the last survivor of the Democratic primaries and the ultimate challenger, are people who support Bernie Sanders as vociferously as they do, or Elizabeth Warren, or any of the others, and who back up their support with money, are they going to be writing those checks to the nominee if the nominee is not their person? Because that is in large part going to determine who wins this election. But more than that, it's going to, not more than that, but it's also going to indicate whether or not these people are going to go out and vote for somebody other than their person. Mm-hmm. Well, and so that's the fear that I have anyway.
Those are separate issues, though, right? Because the Warren Sanders donors are small-dollar donors. They're people who have been motivated by their message. Yang is not a small-dollar donor. He's got a big, you know, California Tech Valley money coming in. And so it depends on how the candidate, ultimately, whoever the candidate is, how they mobilize, how they speak to the grassroots. That's going to be really important in order to get both the donations and the votes. But I don't think that it will change the total amount spent on this election at all, just because there is so much big money involved, unless the Democratic nominee decides to reject large donor monies, you know, refuses corporate backing, and does all the things that Sanders and Warren have sort of built their campaign on. So I doubt it. I doubt that'll happen. And I doubt that Warren and Sanders, if either of them are eventually the nominee, will be able to stick to that message of small dollar donorship. There's a lot.
What happened to Warren?
She's still up there.
I know, but she's not. It was a real duking it out between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
But something seems to have happened that Warren seems to have fallen.
I think she's retooling her message. She's backed off on some of her more progressive healthcare policies.
Right.
I think she's playing more towards the middle. I think she sees Sanders surging among the very same base that she's drawing from. And that her campaign's worried about that, and they're pivoting towards the middle, where you have people like some of the lower-ranked candidates who are still making
Biden.
Plays.
You have Joe Biden.
Biden and Booker and Buttigieg, who I know
yeah,
I keep
Booker
throwing
Booker and Buttigieg. Buttigieg, of course, raising a lot of money. No question about it. He's got a very committed base.
Well, looks like may well take Iowa, which will give him a big bump.
Maybe.
Right. If he doesn't take Iowa,
nevertheless,
he'll be out, but if he does,
you see Biden and all of the latest polling. You got a 538 and the rest of it. He's surging.
Yeah, it's just because he hasn't made a mistake yet.
What'd you say?
It's only a matter of time.
What?
Biden will surge, and then he says something ridiculous or touches somebody the wrong way, and all of a sudden he plummets again, and we're no longer fans.
But, you know, my belief is, regardless of who ends up the nominee, it's going to be a very different election this time, because that kind of single gaffe thing isn't going to throw the election the way it would in some years. It's going to be the appeal of the candidate. It's going to be how the candidate looks versus Trump. I think, you know, the debates this year are going to be interesting, not very meaningful, but interesting. And, you know, it's really going to end up who can get the votes out. So Trump's strategy is keep Democrats at home, right? We need a candidate who says, I can get the Democrats out, and then that'll make the difference. And remember, it's four states that matter.
Well, Trump has a single issue that can get him elected, and that's the economy.
Yep.
And we saw, I was watching CNN yesterday, and there was a new poll out which showed, and I don't remember the number, but something like 67% of the American people think that the economy is great. Well, that's got to help them in this. Everything else has got to hurt them.
You know, these numbers from Sanders, these fundraising, $34.5 million in the last quarter of 2019. Is anybody on this panel somewhat surprised at the resurgence of Sanders? The guy had a heart attack and surgery, and for a time it looked like, okay, Elizabeth Warren is going to outpace him on the left side of that party. It seems like Sanders has some real sea legs, and A, is this panel surprised, and B, should Biden be extremely worried about this?
Well, the New York Times thinks he should. New York Times has thought that Sanders has a shot at winning this. And I think he's almost has a religious fervor going for him among the left in this country.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that he's our guy. He was there when nobody else was there. We owe it to him. He's our guy. And if he had a heart attack, so that's when we really need to be there with him.
I don't begrudge him that, because he earned that.
The heart attack?
In service to the American people. But his entire political career, I mean, his first four races, he lost at 2%, 3%, 4%. He won his first mayorship by 10 votes after the recount. It was 14 and then went down to 10. If you study his political career, then he went and interviewed kids at public libraries, spoke to people in the streets, stood up for the disabled, created programs for working people. And that's been his message. And I'm actually heartened by his resurgence, because it means that audience is paying attention and that they're listening to the message. And yeah, Biden should be scared. And yeah, Warren should be scared.
But is that enough of an audience? Is that enough of a group? We know that Bernie has the ability to get, you know, right up there. The question is, can he get over the hurdle?
That is the group. I think we all live in, all of us around this table probably live in circles that are only adjacent, if slightly overlapping, to what the American public, a big A, big P, looks for, except for y'all in radio. You hear it every day. But it's, y'all.
You're in radio too. Right?
Well, I don't think, to Alan's question, I don't think that his support is enough in a general election. He's, without question, has a committed and a large delegation of people who support him, and we've seen that for 4 years since the last election and during the last primary season. I don't believe he is electable on a national ticket. I think he's too old. I think he's too left-wing. And excuse me, I think he's Jewish. And I think that is, the country is still not ready to elect a Jewish president.
And we should point out that you're Jewish too. Yeah, I'm sorry.
He's a white man. That's to his credit.
Yeah, he'll be all right.
But yet his dynamics at the last Democratic debate, he was pretty strong. He had a pretty strong debate.
I wouldn't argue that. I just think he is perceived as too far to the left, and I don't believe the country is there.
Well, according to contemporary polling, you're certainly right.
Well,
I mean, we know
the only one who wins against Trump in contemporary polling is Biden.
Biden, that's it's right.
Biden.
And I saw
by
that
a lot right
I
now.
I saw that on the 538
right now.
Right, and they have every one of those candidates up against Trump, and one. Who does it, and does it fairly decisively,
and
I thought.
You say right now, like it can change, and it can, but it also could be once Trump, the assassination machine begins, he's the communist, he's the guy who's going to die because he just had a heart attack. Remember what he did to Hillary? That has never been turned against him.
Oh, yeah. No, it'll be really interesting, fascinating, in fact, to see on what issues and in what ways Bernie moves away from his leftist platform.
Right. You think he will?
And I don't think Trump will ever debate him either.
I've interviewed Bernie.
Maybe
100 times back in the day when he was a congressman.
I would hope so.
In the congressional corner, sure. And, I think this is a guy who truly believes in what he is saying and believes if you're consistent in your views, people will flock to you. I don't think he's going to be the traditional guy who runs to the center when the time comes.
And he's proven it time and time again. And now he knows what he's doing. He's been in politics for long enough to understand the strategy behind it, too. It's just about getting those voters to the polls. He knows who his voters are. And if he can get them to the polls, he can win.
But that raises the next question. yeah. Let's just say that Biden is the candidate, and we know that there were some, it wasn't all, but some who didn't show up at the election, and hence we got Trump. And now, will that happen again this time? And will Bernie be there to make sure that doesn't happen again?
You know, anecdotally, based on the mail we get here, that's not going to happen. It's going to be the same as last time.
Could be.
It's Bernie or no one.
So if we had exactly the same demographic, if we had all the same voters doing the same things they did last time, which of course is a ridiculous statement.
Sure.
Right. Then in fact, the answer would be it really wasn't that the Sanders folks not showing up doesn't look like it had a huge impact. Because that was mostly among populations that aren't the big voting populations. What really had the big impact was Hillary people not coming to support Hillary who normally would have voted Democrat.
Mm.
So that's I think, true. You know, again, if Sanders could get those people out without losing his folks, you'd have had him winning. But who knows what would happen, as you say, once the attack machine's on. You know, they're going to be running against – Trump is going to run against socialism regardless of who the candidate is. It's obviously easier for him to run against Warren or Sanders.
But you're
Sanders
saying, can Sanders
but
get black, Southerners, old people?
That's the question. And at the moment – right. But as long as if those folks come out, then that's what matters. As opposed to whether the sort of younger voters who were the ones who mostly said, I'm staying home because I don't like Sanders – so again, it's very hard to tell.
So do you see a difference between a Hillary candidacy and a Biden candidacy? Are they the same people in many people's minds, or are they different?
I think the reason Trump is trying so hard to make Biden, build up Biden being corrupt.
He knew that from the beginning.
Is to try to create that equivalence. Whether they people currently see that equivalence, I don't think so, given the polling, but again, it's early days. We haven't had a single election yet.
And I don't think, although I'm aware.
It'll be the primaries will start to
answer. Yeah, and I'm aware that
questions.
People don't usually vote for the vice president. But I think if a Bernie is nominated, if a Biden is nominated, Warren, who's up there in age, is nominated, the vice presidential selection is going to be very important.
That's right.
Isn't there a view among Democrats that the vice presidential selection is great and whoever goes in will have a good person? It's the top spot on the ticket that's in question.
Well, I mean, yes, I think I agree with that because the prevailing wisdom is that somehow in some combination it's going to be a black man or woman or a woman.
Yeah. So Biden is a man. That's number one. He is a white man. That's a big advantage in a race different than Hillary. He was hugely popular under Obama. As Uncle Joe, he has a working class background that he's used to his advantage, which should help in Wisconsin and Michigan. He would not make the same mistake.
Pennsylvania.
There's a lot of sympathy from people who know what went on in his family.
Yeah, tons of sympathy. Even Hunter Biden. I mean, the bad thing still, and this bothered him, this ruined him in two previous attempts to become president. He has good people advising to him, and he does not listen. He has a lot like Trump that way. He has mishandled the Hunter Biden thing, which is not going to go away. They need to deal with that.
Would you deal with it, by the way, Rosa?
We have less than a minute here.
I would talk about it. He has great empathy. This is everyone protects their children even when they do bad things. Everyone in this room knows that feeling. And if he could articulate it, he would win sympathy.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Again, keep them brief. We'll get to as many as we can. No links, no attachments. The proofreading has been very good today. Very good.
Well,
indeed.
I've been reading them not quite as good.
You've been filtering them? Okay. I don't actually see them. But then you're doing a decent job today. So keep it up, Alan. Alan is here. Rosemary Armeo is here. Ira Fussfeld. Jim Hendler as well. Sarah Rogerson, who, by the way, is a professor at Albany Law. See, I got that in there.
But has her WAMC sweatshirt on.
I do.
She's very famous.
Alan and I are twinning.
Yes, we are.
Let's take a quick break for some news, and we will be back. Once again, the email address, panel@wamc.org. We'll be back, and then we'll read some more of your letters. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 10:34 Thursday morning. It is 2020, and we are back where we were right before the end of the year at the Roundtable panel. Rosemary Armeo is here. Ira Fussfeld, Jim Hendler, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Shartok. You can join us if you wish. Send us your reckons. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Traditionally, Alan will read the letters, but right now he's on his phone. So we'll
I'm right here.
Okay, you're good?
I'm ready.
Oh, all right. So why don't you read a couple then?
Okay, if that's
great.
All right with
that
you,
would be fine.
Boss. John says polarization. Dear panel, I wish the media would stop using the term polarization to describe the current positions of American parties. The term implies that both sides have been moved equally to unmovable and assumed unreasonable positions. But this is not the case. Studies show that Democrats have become slightly more liberal, while Republicans have dug in wholeheartedly to their current bunker of illogic and lies. Further, Democrats have shown to be more open to negotiations, often to the dismay of many, than the Republicans. Finally, polls show that Democratic positions on many critical issues facing the country are in line with what the public wants, and that's from John. What do you think?
I think polarization is as good a word as any. You want to pick a different one, that's fine, but it does describe what the state of the country is. It's polarized. It's almost 50-50 split.
It is.
But I do think the point, and I think Libby made this point on Monday, right, is that, you know, we tend to be a center-right country in general, right? So you've seen a move to the right. You've seen the other side move a little bit to the left. So you've still got a polarization. But the caller is right. There's a lot more spread at the moment in the Democratic Party mm-hmm. than the Republican Party, which, of course, is part of why we're having this discussion about finding a candidate, the difference between a Biden and a Sanders, things like that. On the Republican side, you don't – the two people who are far apart are still a lot closer than right now on the Democratic side.
Is another way to say that is that there's also polarization within the Democratic Party, which is going to be ruinous in an election against Trump, which has consolidated the Republican
Party. If it becomes full polarization versus if it becomes just eventually getting behind one candidate.
But Rosemary said something earlier, I believe it was Rosemary, who was referring to the 538 polling in which the question was, who could beat Trump right now? Now, you can talk about polls all you want. You can damage them. You can say they're no good and the rest of it. Nevertheless, pretty impressive that Biden is still out there. And I'm not – I mean, I've lost some fervor for Biden, that's for sure. But these polls show that Biden is the single one who can do this.
That is true. However, Sarah's point that these polls are at this time are essentially meaningless. And it might be that Biden's continued advantage has to do with name recognition. He's still the best known of all the Democratic contenders.
Could be. But remember, this has been consistent now.
Yeah,
Being out there, we've said from the very beginning, people on this panel have said over and over again, it's too early or too early, too early. But in any case, Biden stays up there. His appeal among black voters, for example, is huge.
Yes.
But the conversation right now is Democrats debating Democrats about which Democrat they want. Once it opens up, then we're talking to the middle.
Yeah.
Then we're talking to the people. And again, I'm going to talk about Michigan again because I just went home. And polarization is right. Literally, people were separated by ideology in the room. I walked upstairs.
Oh, was that fun for you?
The Democrats were playing Uno. Republicans were sitting by the tree. And it was actually a lot of fun for me because for the first time, I decided to be an observer and to elect out of the conversation where usually I'm the one that's starting
elect,
all of the...
Elect out. Elect
out, speaking of sitting at home. But I watched how it played out. And it's so interesting. Michigan... with a female Democratic governor. And not at all, I mean, what I'm seeing is my centrist relatives moving towards the left. They don't like what they're seeing under the Trump presidency.
Maybe because were in the room.
They don't know. Trust me, my presence does nothing in that room. They, you know, when they've raised you and changed your diapers, it doesn't matter how many degrees you have. You're putting still that little girl that they see. So I don't know. I think I worry about it just as much as all of you. But once the conversation opens up and we have our candidate, we're talking it to a whole nother different group of people.
Well, but I want to point out, and I know Jim has something to say, but I want to point out back to Rosemary's reference to 538. That was not among Democrats. That was among everybody. And that's why it's so impressive that people who can swallow something from Trump can't, you know, can also say, well, okay, if I have to vote for one of them, it would be Biden.
So I looked at the details of some of those 538 polls, and being the data geek, I won't go into all the details. But what you're basically seeing at this point doesn't look like it's Biden name recognition. What it really is much more a contention in the progressive wing over the candidate. So in other words, the middle is pretty clearly behind Biden right now. Buttigieg is doing very well, but at the same time, he's seen as a little more progressive than Biden, even though there's a, you know, everyone
because
calls him
gay.
A middle.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone calls him a middle candidate. But
who's
still
winning in Iowa? Buttigieg has a very strong ground presence.
Buttigieg is still ahead. Looks like
there.
He's going to do well in Iowa. But so, for example, you see, Booker is taking votes away from Warren, but not away from Sanders, according to, so again, when you look at these,
well, that
that's
makes
just
sense.
One of a whole bunch of little examples. So you
why
start looking at those.
Because his policies.
His policies, but also the minority, too.
Yeah. So you start looking at those little effects and then say, now put all of that together. Once you have one candidate, then those numbers are going to shift around and you can play with them at great effect. But when you ask the question right now, who would you vote for? You're asking a split electorate on one side, right? And Biden is the best of them. But
so
I think what it will look like when it, but no
when,
one knows what that
coalescence
is going
to look like.
When do
you expect to see the next view that would give us something different, Jim? After
Iowa? I expect it's going to be after the first big day.
So all right, Iowa's first, and then New Hampshire after that?
Yes.
Yeah.
What if Biden wins neither of those and not by not a close margin? Does that change the equation at all?
So Biden is not expected to win either of those. I think the bigger thing is if he does win one of those, that might very well change the equation. Right. The
and
current thinking,
South Carolina, which
and if
up.
He's not second in both places, that would also
right,
be
because isn't
issue.
Bloomberg sitting out all of them?
Yes. Well, he's not in
he's
yet.
Not coming until March.
Right. Yeah. So I think the big thing will be what happens when you start hitting the big days, the Black Tuesdays in South Carolina, for example, will be. So, for example, if Biden didn't win South Carolina, that would be a game changer.
So Ira, I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned before that one of the things Bernie might have going against him was that he was Jewish. Bloomberg is Jewish. Would that be going against him, too?
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I could be wrong. I mean, we've elected a black president. We still haven't elected a woman. And I believe there are pockets in this country that will not support a Jewish president. I mean, and I'm not sure I would extend that to say, look what's going on with all these anti-Semitic attacks. Having said that, there is this undercurrent of anti-Semitism in this country, and it's not decreasing. It's going the other way. So I think I listed the Jewish thing with Bernie as the third reason.
Yes,
I still
you did.
Believe the his. I'm sorry if it's ageist, but the man is 78 years old.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Just had a heart attack.
And he's most importantly, I don't believe his politics will play well in the entire country. So I yes. think that's why if there is another moderate aside from Biden, and there might be, Rosemary and I were talking about Klobuchar, not sure where you'd put Booker, but if there is another moderate, he or she has got to step up pretty soon because I believe the party must nominate a moderate to beat Trump.
Yep.
We talk about the four states that are the key to the election. If you have and I believe they're all primed to move away from Trump, the suburban women, the blue collar workers who may find that they who have found that Trump's promises have not borne fruit, they're prepared to make that shift, but not if it's the wrong person who they would be shifting to.
And I think some of the other states come into play because, again, some of those purple states are not as obvious this. I mean, on both sides. So, for example, the fact that in theory Texas could come into play, that's hard to believe. But, boy, would that be – that would change everything.
Yeah.
It's still hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. I don't think it's going to happen. But it's going to be a lot closer there than it's been in past years. It'll depend a lot on the candidates.
Well, I hope Texas doesn't make Beto the campaign director. He did not prove to be a good campaign.
Sonia says, fundraising. Dear panel, apparently you missed the news? Question mark.
Bernie Sanders has officially reached 5 million individual contributions. Didn't we say that?
Yes,
we led the segment with those numbers.
Apparently we
Bernie's
did.
Bernie supporters don't hear any pro-Bernie sentiments coming out of this panel, Alan.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Shattering, I think I see what you mean.
At least not the ones who are writing in. Nobody writes in when they're happy, though.
Yeah, that's true. Correct.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders has officially... Wait. Rosemary, maybe I'm just dense. What did you mean by that?
That when we do say good things about Bernie, yeah. The supporters don't hear. They just wait to pounce on any tiny or all big right. negative criticism.
Bernie Sanders has officially reached 5 million individual contributions, shattering all records. His fourth quarter fundraising alone brought in $34.5 million and an average of $18 each from individuals. Isn't that high? Not billionaires, not corporations. 100% grassroots. Most have not maxed out, so we'll be able to keep giving. And nearly 300,000 of these donors were new. Sanders is the only candidate that has more donors than Trump.
Okay, let's take a break here. It's the roundtable panel we have.
Really?
Let's see, who's on the panel today? Oh, Jim Hendler, Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Sarah Rogerson from Albany Law, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to the roundtable. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, who is getting better every day. Sarah Rogerson, Jim Hendler, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. We have just been reading some emails that have come through, and let's do some more of that. Panel at WAMC.org.
Anything you say, Chief. Ruth says, inevitable war. Call me cynical, but in my experience, Republican presidents who are in a little political trouble, like low polling numbers, have started wars to puff up their image. So far as I'm concerned, Trump's inclinations to withdraw troops are irrelevant. I've been waiting for him and the Republicans to ramp this up more than sword rattling to improve their image of strong leadership. Ruth from Western Massachusetts.
Can I say something about strong leadership? Because this is my favorite story of the weekend. The Pope slapped somebody.
And we've gotten about three letters on that.
Have we?
Yes.
I am fascinated by that. And I made sort of a joke on it on Facebook. And
did you see it?
Yeah, I've saw the video several times from many different angles. And a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, popes have been killed before. And where was the security? And I get all that. But this woman who grabbed the Pope while he was shaking hands with followers made the sign of the cross. It was not malicious. She was just overcome, I think, and she reached down and grabbed this 82-year-old man as he was walking away and pulled him, yanked him towards her, and he slapped her hand twice and
he
walked away with
the
frown.
Intention.
Exactly. He was irritated and annoyed. But the next day, this is the part I like, the next day he apologized. Yep. He said, I'm sorry for this bad example. Oh, my God, I wish we had a president like
that. Can you imagine? Yeah.
You know, it was a miscarriage. Even the Pope, it made him look human. It brought him down to our level. And his response was to say, I was wrong. I wish I didn't
do this.
That's
what the Pope is supposed to do that.
I know. And he did it. A president is supposed to do that too, Ray.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was surprised. I'm hesitant to comment on anything regarding the Catholic Church because I know nothing about it and I'm not part of it.
This wasn't policy of the church. Don't
right.
You think?
No. So I do think I was very surprised that the security was not more.
I don't think that the woman looked to them. They were right there, right behind
but
him.
When she grabbed him and there was clearly a problem, you would have thought that the guy's hand would have been there immediately. And it was like he was already walking away before the before
they,
the
they walked
guy
in
came.
Behind him, but by that time the Pope had already slapped her. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I want to hear from the woman. You know, you've annoyed the Pope.
Well, they paid her off with an indulgence later on.
I hope so.
Not sure what that is, but I believe it.
Yeah, never mind.
And then we heard from Maggie. What to do? Psychoanalyzing the president is important, but can we discuss for a minute on what people can do about him? One thing that will definitely help Democrats win the election is getting out the vote, especially making sure that the voters who have been wrongly removed from the voter rolls get back on. Yes, I think that's true. You have to fight for that to make sure that happens.
We have the women's marches are going to be coming up again. It's January. I think it would be, and anyone can come. Anyone who cares about this election, it made a big difference to me and to a lot of other people in this country to see the turnout at the first women's march. And so that's coming. There are opportunities coming up again.
And we had better hope that people show up.
because if they don't show up, you're going to there'll be an alternative message, which which would not be good. You know, 50% of the American people who could vote don't vote, and of that 50%, I'm here to at least hypothesize, and I think I'm right about this, that a good number of those are not Democrats, are people who would vote Democratic. So the idea of working on this is going to be huge. And if the Democrats don't work and don't get out the vote, they'll lose.
I would say the other thing to do is to plug into your local politics. Become a member of a Democratic committee in your county government or whatever structure your holler or your town or village is incorporated under. That matters. Learn how the van system works. You can download an app online to figure out how to get out the vote that targets voters based on their address and their political affiliation. I mean, you can host a house party and invite your neighbors, and you can figure out that information online.
And you have to be careful about what you say. One of my little difficulties, I'll get mail on this, with the Democrats in Western Massachusetts is they name themselves the Democratic Brigade. And, you know, that has a sort of, you know...
revolutionary connotation.
Yes, it isn't the kind of thing which would get a middle class, you know, sort of Republican-leaning but willing to vote Democrat person doing it. That's my sense of it. Anyway, so thank you, Maggie, for that very good...
honestly, we should be doing whatever Bernie's doing. That's all I want to say about that.
I can't disagree.
Okay, so David wanted to know if we had anything to say about the Pope slap, and we have.
Yeah, Rosemary's all over that story.
Oh, I love that story.
Thank you very much.
My favorite.
And Tracy says heart attack. Happy New Year, dear panel. Didn't LBJ have a heart attack at age 47 and subsequent heart attacks afterwards? I think he did.
He was already in office.
Yes.
So did Cheney.
I too, by the way.
Cheney had like new hearts and stuff installed. is that a really good policy to follow that LBJ, we vote for it?
And LBJ did die after leaving office, but at a very young age. He was not 70 years old.
Well, and he didn't do any of the things you're supposed
to
do.
Massive heart attack, I believe. I want to say 68. I hope I'm not
wrong. He always looked older. So, Ike had a heart attack.
Yeah, Ike had a heart attack.
And his doctor made him walk every day, a very good rule.
But that's not who I want to have in the office.
Ike?
Nope. No, I mean, you get to pick a healthy person and an unhealthy person.
But we're not voting for people. We're voting for ideologies.
Yes.
Good point.
What if that person dies, though?
That ideology lives on.
Maybe not. Not if, for example, he's taken a vice presidential candidate, like Kennedy took Johnson hating his guts, and Johnson becomes the president. Although, one's got to say, ideologically, he did pretty impressively.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind if we regress back to moderate politics. The benchmark would still be set that we elected a progressive Democrat to the White House. And that benchmark is important.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Normatively, so the further out we go, the less we come back. And so, you know, I'm not afraid of liberal politics, and I'm certainly not afraid of how they're playing out in this election, because it's moving the ball forward in ways that Republicans have been really efficient at moving it back.
Yeah, and that's my fear. I actually love all the ideology. I would go for all of it, legalizing pot, pay off all the debt so young people are not shackled, all of that I'm for. I'd rather spend money on that than on sending military into the Middle East, for example. However, the result in 2016 was shocking. It's the Republicans who are pulling us back, not Democrats moving us forward. So maybe it is time for somebody who's just going to, like, restore the order, restore decency. I don't know. I haven't decided. I am thinking about it, though.
Go ahead. Sarah, you look like you might want to say something.
No, I just saw a lot of hand waving.
We were making signals to each other about when we had to leave.
Alan wanted to know what time the segment
anytime
ends.
Soon?
If you're scoring at home, it's 58 minutes and 50 seconds. Okay, 10, 15,
not a second longer.
No. This is not a time for incrementalism. It's a time to save our country, and Democratic policies result in more stability than the conservative regression that we're seeing.
But they have to win first, Sarah, and I don't think I know that is a leftist talking point that this is no time for incrementalism. But I'm not sure that we get it back without doing that. Without going to somebody who's going to hold the line. I think that is Biden's appeal. I think that is the reason people are sticking with him. Even, I mean, he's done crazy. We don't like him for things that he's done in the past. But his current run, his candidacy has been marred with all kinds of problems. He has not done well. And yet he has had steadfast support. You and Judith had a bet that he would not still be in the lead this far into the race.
I said
you
yes.
You won
right?
it.
Yes.
Yeah, you won it, Alan. Fair and square. It has
How
been
long
remarkably
ago was the bet?
Stable.
Well, no, it's a
it
Judith.
Several months ago.
Judith
really?
Has favorites, and Biden is not her favorite.
Yeah, he's not mine either, but I do understand that appeal. I would, and I think a lot of Democrats would vote for anyone to just get rid of Trump. And as so far, prove me otherwise, I don't see the others doing it. Just don't.
I hear you.
Yeah. And the other thing is that once a moderate gets in, once an incrementalist gets in, they're still going to be affected by other voices in the party. And we do have the Democrats. We have a very strong slate of people with great ideas, including people who are now dropped out of the race. Kamala Harris and Julio Castro were very smart thinkers. And they are not going to go away. It's not as if, just like Hillary in the last election
especially
was pulled by Bernie, the same would happen here.
Well, especially if the Democrats take the Senate, which I think is very much in play right now. You saw today the senator from Maine.
Susan Collins.
Susan Collins.
Which they'll do by putting up the Democrats, by putting up moderates.
Yes. Well, the problem
with her is she always makes these noises.
About you know about sensibility and then does the wrong thing.
Right. She waited for Lisa Murkowski. She said that she would be open to having witnesses at a trial in the Senate.
Well, but as you said the other day when you're talking about Murkowski, let's just see what I'm not going to get too excited about that.
No.
I said that too, and I agree. Okay, and then John says mandatory voting. This is an interesting letter. If we had it, if we had planes flying through the room here, if we had it, mandatory voting turnout would not be an issue.
So I was in Australia.
Well, we don't have it.
We don't have it. I was in Australia about 20 years ago, and we were just there for a couple months. We actually had to go down to the town hall and prove we were foreign so we wouldn't be fined for not voting.
Yeah.
And the Russians
they have about a 98% turnout.
Well, the old Soviets certainly
had universal
voting.
Everybody voted, right?
You didn't vote.
98%? You mean even with the fines, some people didn't come vote? Wow.
Compulsory anything troubles me.
Yes.
And this is the last sentence in this is, we sanction people who don't pay their taxes. The vote is more important. If you don't vote, you should pay with a fine or community service. And that's John.
That ends up hitting poor people. That's what that does.
Well,
we're moving polls away from poor communities in order to suppress the liberal vote. And so fill the coffers with fines are poor people.
Oh, we don't have days off on election day. We have it on a work day. Voting is not easy or welcoming in the United States.
And the Republicans don't tend to help
it happen. By the states.
No, they don't want it to.
That's
right. Of course.
Well, and in fact, if you look at the numbers from last election, I think you can pretty much show that the Wisconsin suppression changed the outcome of that state. If it had been enough to change the whole election, I think you would have seen an awful lot of stuff happening in court. But
do you not see
there were 37,000 votes basically uncounted, and the margin was 10,000. Those 37,000 were from overly, Democratic
districts. So why didn't it happen?
Because of the rules. So in other words, they purged these people from the records. Now they held those things saying these could be brought in if illegal action, because all of these suppression things are still being, they haven't yet reached the Supreme Court level. However, the Supreme Court's ruling on gerrymandering would lead you to believe that the Supreme Court is going to say we're not going to touch.
Supreme
Court. We're going to leave the states controlling their own voting.
Well, that gerrymandering ruling, as I have said many times, has been since the days of Felix Frankfurter saying we don't get into the political thicket. So that one, I don't, it's terrible. The gerrymandering is terrible. Okay, well, that's all
I'm still worried about safe election booths. I don't think we have done enough research or the research we have done indicates that there are problems with
And let's not
security.
Even get into the whole issue of election and cybersecurity.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll do that next time. Thanks to everybody who is here. Sarah Rogerson, Jim Hendler from RPI, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok. Thank you for listening. And thank myself as well. Thank you, Alan, and thank everyone. God bless us, everyone.